1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. 51551, what's your answer? Our text number, and Joe at rt.ie is the email. Emma, good afternoon. You got some shock this morning, 6:45 a.m. What happened?
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good. You're on the WhatsApp, which is great.
Yeah, this morning, 6:45, my doorbell rang, and I was presented with a tow-away truck and I would say maybe six big burly men handed me a letter and said, we're taking your car away, it's being seized.
So you heard the doorbell ring. You came, I don't know whether you were up already or you came down the stairs.
I'd love to say I was, yeah, but okay. No, I wasn't.
Don't worry. You came down the stairs and you saw
I woke up to my dog barking like crazy. Myself and my husband got up and came down just answered the door.
And what did you think when you looked through the glass? What do you think was happening at a quarter to seven in the morning?
I just thought it was something happening on the road, or maybe it was somebody. I didn't know, to be honest. I was half asleep. I didn't know, to be honest. And they just basically said, "We want your key. We're taking your car." And we were kind of saying, "Well, why? You know, what's going on?" I had no idea. No pre-warning. I didn't have any pre-warning, didn't know what was going on, and it was in my name, so I opened the letter and it just said toll bridges or NDA or the road authority or something like that. And like there was no, like, look, these lads were big, massive, you know. Obviously my husband, you know, initially very angry and, you know, wanted to protect his family. Like, look, what are you going to do? Do you know what I mean? Like, the truck was parked in the middle of the road. So which meant that if anybody was heading to work or whatever, you know, they knew that they were putting you under pressure. To get it sorted. We were told that the office wasn't open till 10 o'clock and that they didn't even have a figure of what was outstanding or what was, you know, why they were taking the car.
Just as a matter of interest, Emma, was your name on the court order? Your name as a female?
My name, yeah.
And it was clear. Yeah. Was there one female in that group of seven bailiffs?
No.
Well, what if they... But if someone knocks on a hall door at 6:45 in the morning and they're looking for a woman, who might be still in bed, might be stepping out of the shower, might be feeding a child or whatever... I would at least expect there'd be at least one woman at the door and say, are you okay? Can we talk to you now? Do you want to get dressed or whatever? You say there were seven men.
Yeah, I knocked into my neighbour next door who has CCTV and we could see at the end of the road there was four people outside and there was three people at the end, all men, all big lads. Okay. You know, there was no very...
And were they men and were they dressed in black?
Black, all in black. They'd no masks on at the door, as in face masks, nothing like that.
As in COVID,
Yeah.
Okay, was your car gone?
Is gone. So we had to wait 3 hours to ring the sheriff's office because they had no information at the door. Like, they kind of went, and I said to my husband, you know, is this real? You know, like... really, it was a piece of paper. I sent it onto your team. It was like a piece of paper printed out, you know, that anybody could do. And I'm thinking, have we just given my car to anybody? I didn't know. Do you know?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Did they flash ID?
No, they didn't. Not that I remember, but to be honest, Joe, I was in shock.
In shock, okay.
So my husband
would you'd remember someone holding up an ID card saying, this is my name, this is who I
work for? Yeah, I think I would. Now,
I presume they'd say we had it on our arm or around our neck at that time.
I'd have to double check that, but I definitely didn't see an ID.
Okay, so you're in shock and your car is gone.
Yeah.
So you're waiting to ring the office.
Yeah, so... I had to wait till 10 o'clock. Of course, you know, kids are getting up for school. Mm-hmm. You know, you're trying to be normal. And, you know, my eldest, she suffers with anxiety. She was actually hit by a car a couple of years ago, and she really saw, so I'm trying to hide that from her. Okay. You know, you're the whole thing, you're trying to keep everything as normal as possible. And I rang the sheriff's office this morning, and I spoke to a guy called Con, I think.
Okay.
He said to me that there was a court order and that the amount outstanding was 8,100.
Wow.
Now my car is a 141 Mazda. It's not worth 8,000. So I'm kind of going, what the hell? So, and then my next question was, well, what is it for?
Okay.
You know, like, what is this for? Yeah. I don't, you know, and he couldn't tell me what it was for. It was a court order and they're just dealing with it, and that was it. So I said, look, I'll ring the solicitor. I rang Easy Trip first because I have my tag with Easy Trip.
Okay.
No, sorry. I rang the solicitor first, and the girl in the I said, look, what the hell is going on? I have a tag on my car. And she said, there's 34 tolls from March to June, I think she said last year, that weren't paid. Okay. So in total, those tolls come to €100. Like if you were to pay them normally. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So look, I dropped the ball somewhere. But that was what they would have come, the value of them. So I said to the girl, look, this is obviously something has gone horribly wrong here. I have a tag on the car. And
it does get you through at the minute, doesn't it?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And I said, you know, and she said, well, look, it's gone too far now. There's nothing we can do. Mm. So I was getting no answers out of her either. So I rang Easy Trip, who I have my tag with, and I explained to the guy, I said, look, I only got the car last March. So, you know, it's not anything years ago. Do you know what I mean? It's right at the start of COVID. So I said to him, can you go back through my transactions? So in October, I was onto them because my card had expired and it wasn't going through. Obviously, the payments weren't going through.
Okay.
And I updated the card in October. But when I was on the phone to Easy Trip in the October, I said to the girl, look, there's a couple of tolls outstanding on the car.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, they'll be backdated and they'll go through your account. So roughly around the same day, about €500 came out of my account from Easy Trip. So
But the bottom line is, you owed 34 tolls at 290 apiece, which came to 100 quid. But how did €100
morph
into 8,000? And this is a government agency, the National Roads Authority, or the part of TFI Transport for Ireland. One is part that you don't get mixed up which is which at either side. But anyway, did they say they tried to contact you, or there was a court case? Or?
Yeah, like, look, I'm not saying, Joe, that I dropped the ball somewhere along the line here. There's something that's happened. I didn't get the court date. I've obviously missed the court date, and they've gone straight to season goods. Look, I'm not saying, you know, that I'm not at fault here. What I'm saying is, how did €100 go to 8,000? To now, they're cutting me a deal, is what I was told today, for 5,000, and I can get my car back. We're both self-employed, so neither of us were working for the past year.
There's no way. 5,000 to get 5,000 and to pay someone else, you need to earn nearly 10,000 this country before tax.
Yeah.
I'm looking at this document. One thing that's obvious, they have your address, obviously.
Yeah.
Because they called to your address to take your car. So why didn't they? Did you get a letter in the last month saying we're coming to take your car?
No, never. No. The only thing I can think of, and this is, you know, obviously we're up since quarter seven this morning, and I'm going through. There's apartments behind us, and if you put sat nav into your phone and you come to my house, it brings you to the apartments behind us. So the only thing that I can think of, the plausible thing, is that my post went there, or if somebody was dropping something off, that they put it there. But I mean, they found me this morning, so I don't know. Yeah. Like, you know. obviously I should have followed up on the tolls last October. The girl told me that they'd be backdated, and they were backdated, but they only went 90 days is what I was told this morning. The guy in Easy Trip said to me this morning they only actually go back 90 days and they recovered the tolls and any fees. That's what the €500 was for. So obviously we were in the middle of a pandemic. It wasn't the top of my priority. It's not an excuse. I'm not.
I know, and it's not coming across an excuse. What is coming across is this is bizarre that €100 in tolls. We've an awful lot of toll roads now in the country. There's no toll roads in Northern Ireland, as you know. There's one, I think, in the UK and a bridge. The tunnel is tolled. We've the East Link Bridge is tolled. We've the West Link Bridge is tolled. The East Link Bridge has been paid for 10 times over by the Dublin Family Motors going back and forward because of the lunatic traffic, those lunatic down at the toll bridges as well. And the taxpayer is paid for the motorways time and time again. And the tolls go to private companies. But to go from €100 to €8,000 at the hands of a state agency.
It cost €2,000, they told me, to seize the car.
So it's this morning's operation with the Magnificent Seven men in black, plus the tow truck, plus they would have been called in early.
Yeah.
I presume 5 o'clock to be there. Your place is 6:45. That this morning's operation cost €2,000.
Apparently, yeah.
Oh my God. I don't know. You're saying hands up. From what you're saying, and I've phoned that number, and they're brilliant at that Easy Trip number. The staff, they really are. They're very, very helpful.
Yeah, I have to say, the guy really, I was talking to this morning was lovely. Yeah, and he did say to me, like, if there's anything else we can do, £500 came out of my account. I assumed that and you know what they say about assumption, and I hold my hands up, you know, I should have been, but we were in the middle of lockdown and I was looking after my mum and dad, and you know, it was a rough time for everybody. But
by the way, Emma, where you live, is there a bus service?
There is, but it's I'm in Lucan, but it's in the village.
Okay. You don't live in the village?
No.
Okay.
I need my car for work, Joe. Yeah, like, I know. I'm self-employed and I'm trying to restart my business, and you know, I'm meant to be. So like, I'm stuck now. Like, I can't make money. I can't do anything. You know yourself. Like, I'm not. You know, it's hard enough to try and start back up again after everything, and now this again. You know.
So you need your car. And by the way, in a pandemic, people who were lucky enough to have a car, you were told it was safer to travel on a car with the people in your bubble. Like, I'm laughing at the Transport for Ireland website here again. It says public transport, it's trumpeting this, public transport returning to normal service this weekend with limited capacity. And you know what the limited capacity is? The buses are and everything is working on half full.
Yeah.
So, according to Transport for Ireland, normal service is they mean half full means full. Half full is full in their eyes.
Yeah, so
there's not a normal service. People are under pressure. People are under a lot of pressure, and we know Dublin.
This is just, it's like, apart from the lads arriving at the door and the mortification of that, like, I can't explain to you, you know, for somebody who struggles, and obviously my daughter, you know, you're trying to keep the house together, trying to keep it together over the last year, and then finally to see some light in the tunnel. And then it's like, you know, they know the country's reopening and the vultures are out now. And I said to myself, I can't not say anything. You know, it's not fair. And there's other people that are going to have this as well. And, you know, housing and the whole lot. It's not fair. It's not fair. And like, I hold my hands up. Yeah, I dropped the ball, you know. Obviously something has gone wrong here, absolutely, but not like €100 to 8,100 is just like, I mean,
it's tough. There's now 12 toll roads in Ireland taking hundreds of miles of roads.
And I don't understand with the tolls, what they can't have one pay like, you know, as you go through, why does it all have to be a tag? Why can't they have one where you can just pay as you go through?
Well, you can. There's normally a cashier there, but even that's dying out.
No, not on the M50. This is the M50.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, because... Yeah. Well, you know why? Because they had the toll booths there for years, and people were spending 2 and 3 hours a day queuing up on either side to get through.
Yeah, no, sure. I remember to collect I used to work money. In the airport getting stuck there. Absolutely.
But the other thing as well is recently when you were going through a toll, did it beep when you went?
Oh, yeah, my toll, there's no other outstanding tolls.
Like, yeah, that's what I mean.
As far, there's no, like, I was on to them this morning and I was double checking that, you know, everything is fine. And he said, yeah, like, it's working fine. It was literally last year. And as far as I knew, the money had been taken out.
Because even I had an incident, it's very simple. Recently, I was driving through the M50 and it didn't beep. So you know the way you panic and all these signs saying, get to a garage or we're going to take your house within 12 hours or whatever. It's not funny what happened to you.
No.
I rang them up and they were saying, no, once it doesn't have to beep. Once we have your, if we look at your reg, we'll see you have a tag.
Have a video.
We'll see you have a tag. So there's no issue, which there wasn't. But they were very helpful. But I presume it's the National Roads Authority that said to the sheriff, go and take this woman's car.
Yeah.
Which is, anyway, the NRA have a spokesperson. He's a very good spokesperson, but I don't know if you can't get him at the moment. Okay, Emma, leave it with us. You're now without that car for school, to finish in school, but not finishing school. What do you want to tell me what you work at?
I would love to tell you what I work at, Joe, but I'm actually worried that because there's such a stigma around things like this that I'm worried for contracts. Do you know what I mean?
Okay. Well, I'm sure you're a great worker, Emma, and parent as well. Emma, thanks indeed. We'll leave it at that for now. Thanks for me. You mind yourself now. Yeah, thanks indeed.
You.
Thanks, Emma. Joe at RT.ie, 5 and 5 watching.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815. Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And Joe at RT.ie. Matt, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk to me today.
And thanks for contacting us. What's the issue?
It's a story, Joe, about exclusion. And, you know, it's something which is deeply upset myself and my wife and also my son as well, because my son's been excluded. And so it's in relation to a community football club in South Dublin called Granada Football Club.
Okay.
And, you know, it's they have different age groups, different teams and stuff.
Okay.
And they have these regular training
and then the
occasional match. But, you know, they've had problems with numbers and they've been consolidating their teams and they've gone down to two teams to make sure they've got enough numbers now so that there's plenty of opportunity for the boys. And, you know, we have these WhatsApp groups where the parents and the coaches have a chat about what time to turn up and all the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
And the coach sends around the team structure and says, these are the boys who are going to get to play. My son wasn't included. And, you know, it's the issue I've got here. I mean, I can understand the football club, yes, their objective is to get the good players and push them forward so they become great. That's what you want from a football club.
Mm.
But we're talking about primary school kids here. And, you know, you've got a situation where all of the football grounds have been closed down, all of the sports have been closed down with COVID, and no one's been able to play anything. These boys are all in primary school. You know, they're just a kick-around stage. It's ridiculous to exclude anyone. But, you know, with no thought for how the boy then feels that he's been stigmatised,
have there been many children who were previously playing with Granada FC, have many of them been told you're no longer playing with us?
It's not that they're not being played, they've not been selected to play for these matches. And these matches, Joe, it's not that there's some kind of a league table. These are friendly matches. The football season hasn't even started properly yet. These are just friendlies. And, you know, they're in different parts of Dublin. The first one's up in Raheny. If you can imagine, we're based in South Dublin. We've got groups of parents doing lift share up there. How can I take two kids up to Raheny for a football match and tell my son, you can't come in the car with me? I'm taking your friends, but not you.
And what, what was the previous arrangement?
But the previous arrangement was that the boys could, you know, be rotated on the pitch, and they could sit on the sideline and they could go in and spend a few minutes on the pitch. And I suggested this to the coach, can we not just have a subs bench?
Yes,
and
yeah.
Give all the boys a chance to go on the pitch. You can keep your key players on longer, but give everyone a chance. And, you know, if you go to, I took this up with the coach online, and, you know, let him know my feelings online in the user group, you know, politely. And his response was just to throw me out of the user group. So I've been thrown out of the WhatsApp group. So I contacted the club to try and talk to the director. The director of the club says he knows nothing about it, and the team selection is purely down to the coaches.
So is part of the problem that the team structure moved from three teams down to two?
I think that's, yeah, because if you can imagine, if they had three teams to start with, sometimes they might have a situation where they haven't got enough boys. And it's very difficult to manage a team when you can't guarantee how many boys are going to turn up. So they consolidated them down, especially if you can imagine, you know, a lot of these boys are going on to secondary school, so it's a transitional period for them, and they wanted to get an idea of level.
But my point is, three teams previously togged out on a Saturday for a friendly, whatever. It's now two teams togging out on a Saturday.
Yeah.
Okay. And when they say your son was excluded by virtue of the fact that his name was not on the list.
Correct.
Okay. Was he excluded because of ability? Which
yes.
is I don't know how anyone determines that at that age. But anyway, why do you think he was excluded because of ability?
Because the coaches said that they looked at skill and commitment were the two things they looked at when they decided their teams to go forwards. And, you know, irrespective of a child's ability, you know, they should have an opportunity to play. What if there was a disabled kid on the team?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, they say, well, so you haven't got the ability, you can't play. But if you look at their website, they have got a very clear code of practice listed on their website, which goes to you know, some great pains to talk about the fact that, you know, they should take a child-centred approach, should be an encouraging atmosphere and you know, an atmosphere of fair play. But if I can just read you very quickly, there's one little bit here from their code of practice. It says, Granada Football Club are aware that recent research would suggest increasing numbers of children leave sport at ages 8 to 13. A number of the most common reasons given is that sport is no longer fun, they don't get to play, and there's an overemphasis on winning. Therefore, we make every effort to ensure that there's a balanced approach to competition and make sure that players get a chance to play and strive to keep the fun in football. They're not doing that. They're not keeping up to their own code of practice. And they're blanking me when I try and talk to them.
And do they... They don't say, well, there's pressure from other parents whose children are very, very good and they're being held back by the weaker players.
No, they haven't said that at all. No child should be made to feel left out, you know, by creating a situation like that where a child's left to feel upset and stigmatised that they're not good enough. You know, that's emotional harm. That's active neglect.
Yeah, well, in fairness, everyone is. There's no. It's not intentional. If it is, we have to establish that, and that everyone is a volunteer. Is there any appeal system?
No.
No.
The appeal system is.
Have you spoken? Have you spoken to the parents of the other children who've been excluded on ability?
But yeah, there have been a number of other parents who've chipped in and said that they didn't think it was very fair as well. You know, it's going to be interesting to see who turns up to the match now on Saturday.
And has it been the case before where they haven't been able to field three teams?
I'm not entirely sure what you mean, but whether three teams have showed up, they couldn't play them all.
Yeah.
But I'm not entirely sure. I know that, you know, it's... it is a numbers game. They have to make sure they've got sufficient numbers of boys to play. Okay. But they've got that now. They've dropped down to two teams.
And would the lads? And I know how difficult it can be, but would your son and the other lads, do you think they'd be happy with 10 minutes on the pitch even?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Okay. Well, that's fair. Yeah, I can't. Yeah. Okay, we're asking for a statement from Granada FC. And I'm very conscious, these clubs all over the country are run by volunteers, good people. Doing their best. So hopefully it's a misunderstanding, and hopefully it can be sorted out.
I do not want to detract from the volunteers, who are fantastic.
They put
their heart and soul into it, and they're all busy people, and they all have full time jobs, and they do this in their spare time. But they are also the coaches, and they also have a say in the team selection. And if they've got any sway, they should be able to be talking to the chairman and the director of football at the club and saying to them, look, all the boys need to be having a play here. It's part of our code of practice. We need to insist on it. And when I talk to the chairman and the director of football at the club, they say it's down to the coaches. You talk to the coaches, they say it's down to the directors. They're all washing their hands of it.
Okay. And is it... Have their club premises, do they pride themselves on medals won and plaques won, and have they a glass cabinet with all the cups they've won? Is it?
I'm sure they've got trophies aplenty. They're a great team, but they're just not very inclusive at the moment.
Okay, Matt. Thanks indeed. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie. Emmanuel Sweeney. Emmanuel, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Why did you contact us, please?
I contacted you because recently I was looking at the world rankings of universities around the world.
Yeah.
And I noticed that Trinity College was in the rankings, if you like, in the top universities. But my issue is that...
Well, Trinity...
College is the number one university.
Yeah, Trinity, the number one university in the world, apparently, is the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. I've never met anyone who went there. Apparently, it has been... But the top Irish one in these rankings is, I think, 101, 104, and that's Trinity.
Yeah, no, my issue is this, Joe, that... I would think that because it's history is a colonial university, that UCD and UCC would much more represent Irish cultural identity in terms of the expression of our own genius, traditions and abilities. And that this constant, if you like, colonial representation of the best university has a certain implication that Irish universities representing Irish people, if you like, are less than, if you like. For example, if I could put it to you simply, imagine a Pakistan university in India saying they're the number one university in India. I wouldn't think that would be tolerated for long. What I mean by that is,
Trinity,
if you go back to the establishment of the university in 1582, they were part of our colonial history and the damage imposed on the Irish people. So therefore, from my perspective, I think it's a lack of respect on behalf of the university to imply that they're the number one university in Ireland. That's really the core of my point. Because even if they were, Joe, let's assume they were, then you have a question about who decides these rankings.
Yeah,
former colonial powers that decide these rankings.
If I can make
a key point, surely the expression of Irish cultural identity and our own genius and our post-independence struggle to recover from colonialism, surely it would be respectful of them to stand aside and allow Irish universities to come to the fore. That's really my point, in the sense that, I mean, I had a very bad experience myself going to Trinity.
Oh, you see. Hang on, let's go. Well, I don't want to go into your bad experience, but what have you got against Trinity?
Well, I went there as, if you like, an Irish nationalist. My granduncles are on the roll of honour in Kilmainham. I went there as a law student, a mature student at the age of 28 years,
yeah,
with a substantial previous education.
Yeah.
And what happened was that everything was going fine for 4 years, no issues, no problems. And when a fellow student decided for reasons...
I'm not going down that road.
Yeah, right, that's fine, yeah.
Okay. Why do you keep, like, Trinity was established 1592. Okay, the Queen Elizabeth and all that carry on, and they had commons, and which is the meal every evening, which it was a tradition as well in a lot of British, Oxford and Cambridge, and they did toast the Queen. I don't think they still toast the Queen, do they?
Joe, if you kind of look at the broad sweep of history, I'm not sure how familiar you are with imperialism. Educational imperialism is a major issue in various countries that were colonized, and it's a highly damaging experience for most of the peoples who are colonized. And I think that you have to understand that, you know, that the evolution of the Ireland after independence, if you like, centuries of occupation of Irish, the Irish mind, if you like, is continuing with Trinity being supposedly the best university, the first university in Ireland.
Oscar Wilde, Jonathan Swift, William Trevor, Oliver Goldsmith, Samuel Beckett, Mairead Maguire, Mary McAleese, Douglas Hyde, Mary Robinson.
Yeah, well, Joe, well, I'm referring to
Leo Varadkar.
Yeah, well, I'm referring to the Irish cultural identity.
Yeah, well, what is it? What? Maybe I should have studied English in Trinity, Manuel, because you've lost me. I'm a bit... Are you saying, is there statues you want pulled down in Trinity? Is there... Do you want the board disbanded and you want them elected because they're self-perpetuating board?
No, well, Joe, can I put it to you this way?
Okay.
We have a situation in Ireland where we refer to the 1847 as a famine.
Yeah.
But in fact, it was a genocide because a famine only occurred in countries
where
there's no food.
What's that got to do with Trinity College Dublin?
They were a part of the colonising country in Ireland and participants in everything that happened in Ireland in terms of education.
What do you mean they? What do you mean they? Do you mean the students? Do you mean the staff? Do you mean the provost?
I mean the continuing occupation of Ireland since 1582, Joe. That's what I mean. And the continuing occupation of our country. For example, if I can give you an example, north of the border, we can't even have our own language established our own country.
But why are you blaming...
What would you think of that? Would you say that was colonialism?
Why are you blaming everything on Trinity?
I'm not blaming everything on Trinity.
You are.
I'm talking
You're...
about the occupation of Ireland over centuries.
Yeah, but that's
and Trinity's college role in that occupation. In terms of the laws that were implemented here, what role did Trinity play during the famine? What role did they play?
Well, you tell me.
The
you're the one that's done the research. You're the one. You're the one that's running this campaign. You contacted us to stop Trinity being ever mentioned as the number one university in Ireland.
No, Joe, it's not a campaign. That's incorrect. I didn't say it was involved in any campaign. I'm saying that as a colonial university, they could never be the number one university in Ireland.
Well, what is that's the number one university in Ireland? What is the number?
They don't represent our cultural identity.
No, but what is the number in your view?
Well, I definitely think that UCD, UCC would qualify as that.
Yeah. DCU.
And I would suggest
DCU
that it
DCU were voted by the Sunday Times on a whole different measurements as the best university in Ireland.
Oh, also
best
a brilliant university, I have to say, that established in Ireland after independence. A brilliant university. I have no issues with that. But I have an issue with a university that is declaring itself number one colonial university.
You see, it's, Emmanuel, that's...
Well,
what,
can I put
what,
it to this
What did you study in Trinity? And you qualified.
I studied law in Trinity.
And you qualified. Well done, it's a
I
hard
qualified course. And returned the degree. I gave the degree back because I was treated in a very unfair manner
by the
college.
But you went through lectures and exams, more importantly.
That's correct. And I achieved my honours degree and returned it to the college because I was discriminated against based on my race.
I have no idea what that meant. You were discriminated against on the basis of your race.
That's correct.
So how would they know? The exams are marked anonymously, aren't they? I know there's assignments.
Oh, it wasn't about the marks. It was about an incident of the road where I was treated in a discriminatory manner.
Okay. I'm not privy to that incident.
I understand that, Joe.
You did law.
One
of the things in law is precision. Precision of language. The full
That's
meaning
correct.
Of language and being very careful about ambiguity, be it in
That's
contracts,
correct.
Contracts for builders or contracts for houses or contracts between individuals. Now, you
That's
said
correct.
That Trinity called themselves the number one university in Ireland. They don't. They didn't decide that. They'd no
but
hand.
Who decided that Colonial Colleges?
No, there's well, hang on. Emmanuel, it's a world ranking, and I think there's about four or five different tables. This particular one, it was in the papers yesterday, listed the Massachusetts Institute of Technology as number one in the world. It has been for a number of years. I think it's based on, I'm sure it's a number of factors. It's based on research, it's based on exam results, it's based on, I hope they do something about mental health and care of students. Eleanor O'Mahony, Eleanor.
Hi, Joe, how are you?
Yeah, you're listening to Emmanuel. What do you think? Can you?
Yeah, well, to your point, I think rankings are always controversial, but it's certainly not a group of universities deciding it. They take a lot of time and they look at different things like research, student engagement, gender breakdown increasingly, but primarily research and a bit of teaching. I don't think that this picture that's been painted on the show today represents what Trinity is like today. I think for anyone walking through, it's a very vibrant place full of all sorts of people. The demographics have changed drastically, and I think it's really carved out an important role in Trinity society, in Irish society. And I'm not the number one fan, and I have had difficulties in Trinity, but I do think it's very important and serves an important role. I think there's work to be done, sure, in terms of diversity and inclusion, and I think it's come a long way. And I think also, you know, the new provost, first woman provost elected there a few months ago, Linda Doyle, everything she represents is stuff we want to see in terms of positive change, inclusion, and she lives and breathes that really. So I'd be very positive and optimistic for the next 10 years for Trinity.
But Trinity are doing, some investigation of their colonial past, are they not?
I believe so, yeah. I mean, the historians and academics there really do work very hard. Mm-hmm. And you know, they have all this museum and there's archivists behind that, there's historians behind that. I mean, students as well push for these things. There's a great culture of student activism in Trinity and people who challenge the status quo. You know, when there are, like, obviously there still are some elite structures within Trinity that I myself would disagree with, but I'd like to think that Trinity students are taught to think, are taught to stand up for what they believe in and challenge anything that isn't right. And sometimes the administration listens, sometimes they take a bit more time, but change has come and it is continuing.
Emmanuel, would you go into Trinity?
In what sense do you mean?
Would you walk through for a shortcut?
No, I would not. No, that would not be a shortcut for me, Joe.
No, but if...
Well, I mean,
I know you're going through Trinity for a shortcut, but I'm asking you, geographically, would you go from the front gate out to Nassau Street, because it is a shortcut if you're going to Easton's there and in Nassau Street? Would you go through Trinity for a shortcut? I mean, literally, I don't mean metaphorically.
Well, you know, Joe, they say the longest way, the shortest way home is the longest way round.
Okay.
Is that correct?
I've no idea. That's your first word.
But basically, that lady who mentioned all the changes.
Eleanor,
could I suggest to her, will that mean that more working class children from the inner city will be going to Trinity,
yeah,
or will they just be on small access programs? Or will they actually will there be an open program where we have equality in education, so as working class people don't, as Joe said, have to cut through, they actually just walk by? So
what about all these
changes in education for equality?
I mean,
as regards the proclamation in 1916, which demanded equality for all the children of the nation equally, when will we see the inner city children walking through the front gate? That's the day I want to happen.
You have Lynn Ruan, you know, she's amazing, and she came through the Trinity Access Program. She's in the Senate now. You know, you have Gary Gannon, another very successful politician.
Yeah, but you can't use tokens or exceptions to prove the rule. That they actually proved the rule, the exceptions. You're pointing out exceptions. I'm talking about the working class children from the north side of Dublin, the inner city, the children who walk by in prams, are in prams going by, but will never see the inside of the college.
Yeah, but,
Emmanuel, that's not the fault. Now, I know I have to nuance it here, but that's not the fault of Trinity College. That's the fault of an education system that decides at the end of second level, that third level, one has to be paid for, and the places are severely limited. So you have this competition to decide who gets the limited places, and that competition is called the Leaving Cert, unfortunately. Now, I would love, I've said it before and I'll say it again, I would love if everyone, and I think it should happen, especially during the pandemic, I think everyone who wants to go on to third level should be allowed to go on to third level. There should be enough places.
But you know, my point, you've made my point. Trinity College promotes elitism in education. That's why we're not getting the changes we need.
Well, it's not
an elitist college for elite students from rich backgrounds. That's the whole basis of the college.
Eleanor.
I mean, I disagree. I think Trinity is a lot more, again, a vibrant place with lots of people from different backgrounds. You know, there's a lot of those programs are quite robust. You know, there's different students coming into Trinity every week, and they're learning really interesting things, and they're engaging in a way that they never did before. Like, I'm not saying
but
that's
it is,
perfect.
But Eleanor, it is true that, and it's not just it's third
it
level.
It is true.
The third
but
level
I do
is
think it's changing.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think I think it could change quicker. I really do think it could change quicker. And
fair.
I really think, given that the last year colleges, I know it's been difficult for everybody, the last year colleges have been primarily operating on Zoom. I don't know what the difference between 20 people on a Zoom class and 60 people on a Zoom class is. So I don't know why the colleges, and I know they say, the provost said it when they dropped down to 101, even though that's the highest ranking of any Irish college, they dropped down to 101 in these rankings, which are controversial in themselves. The provost said, we need more staff, we need more staff. In other words, we need more money. I wish the third level, and the CAO are behind this as well. The CAO are just basically a mouthpiece for they're made up of they defend the third level institutions because that's who pays their bread and butter, well, the applicants do. But the CAO is an amalgam of all the colleges. It's not an independent resource or an independent campaigning group for students looking for more places. I think there could have been a lot more imaginative in the last year and ongoing in terms of more places. Just as
Joe,
we have.
Could I just suggest one point where change might be positive?
Yeah.
Is that, for example, Trinity College spends hundreds of millions on building student accommodation blocks.
Yeah.
And their role as a university is not to build accommodation. Their role is in education. And I was wondering if they could put some of the money they spend on the accommodation blocks into the education of the inner city children. It would be much better money spent and would also maintain their true role as a university.
Yeah, but the people, it's the government that have to be putting money into the inner city and different parts of the country. And most universities, most third level institutions have student accommodation.
It's nearly in excess now. Joe, in my opinion, I think it's more to protect pensions than actually to have a role in education.
I really have to cut in here. I mean, I think universities are chronically underfunded and you have people working around the clock on temporary contracts. If there's anything wrong with universities and access, it's funding. Funding is in a ridiculous state. It's been an urgent problem for the last few years. And
but funding is no defence for inequality.
But it can't explain it. No one's defending.
But you see, what you always do in a democracy is you share what you have with as many people as you can.
Yeah.
And that's not the case. Okay. That's not the case.
Emmanuel, I mentioned, Emmanuel, that Trinity have set up a PhD research into Trinity's colonial past. Would you be willing to make a submission to that or appear before it?
Oh, I think I could. Yeah, I definitely think that's possible.
Okay,
I have very strong feelings on the history of Trinity in Ireland and the damage of colonial imperialism in education.
And even if you had to cross the cobblestones of Front Square to get to that,
if anything improves or brings us more towards the truth of reality and the betterment of the country, of course I would do it. I wouldn't let a cobblestone block me.
Okay. Okay. Emmanuel Sweeney, Eleanor Mahoney, thank you both. Joe at RT.ie, 5 and
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Nothing compares to a real holiday with TUI, especially when you know that everything is taken care of. The TUI Holiday Promise puts flexibility first with free changes. Plus, we've included COVID cover on selected holidays. Book your summer holiday with confidence. TUI. Discover your smile. T's and C's apply.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. For more on our 212 offers, visit your local Kia dealer or log on to kia.com.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Back to 13 and 12-year-old children being excluded from soccer teams in non-competitive games on the basis of their stroke skill and ability, I presume that means. Anthony, good afternoon. You were listening earlier.
Hello there, Joe. Yeah. How are you?
Oh,
yes,
good.
I have some advice for that parent who was on the phone to you earlier.
Yeah.
I was in a similar sort of situation when my son was 13 years of age.
Mm-hmm.
In one week, he was excluded from basketball, from GAA, and then he had trials to get into the A team for his absolute love in life, soccer.
Okay.
And unfortunately, he was one of four children who missed out on getting into the A team. So in the space of a week, he was excluded from three different sports. But fortunately, the soccer team that he's a member of is absolutely fantastic down here in North Kerry.
Yeah. Is your line gone there, Anthony? You there, Anthony?
Get him back.
You get your back now. You might be still, I think I hear Anthony still on the line. Because I want to find out how a child copes with being told. Are you back, Anthony?
Sorry about that, Joe.
Okay. How does a child cope with three times in one week being excluded from sports?
Well, what you need to do is to accept your responsibility as a parent and see what you can do for them. So I decided I would step up with the support of the soccer team, which is wonderful, Park FC, and I became a coach. And I started a third team in his age group.
Okay.
Along with another parent, we all got together and we tried to market it and get as many kids as possible. So that's my advice to that parent who was calling in earlier, is to get together with some of the other parents whose children have been excluded, approach the club positively and say, will they support them if they set up a third club? Will they give them the balls? Will they give them the time?
Yeah.
Will they help them teach? And I tell you what, not only has it changed my son's life, it changed my life. I've been a coach now for 3 years. It's been fantastic. We don't work on the basis that we're aiming for trophies. We work on the basis that every child gets time on the pitch. And that happens whether we're 8-0 down or we're 8-0 up. Every child gets a turn. Every child gets to play. It's a great way. It's good for me. It's good for the kids, and it's made a real difference to 18 kids we have on the team now. So that's 11 kids and 7 substitutes, which is the maximum that you're allowed. So we have crammed it to capacity.
Well done.
That's
you're saying, excuse me, maybe Matt should suggest that in the club. Now, Anthony, I just want to come back. How did you explain that to your, is it a girl or a boy we're talking about? Your son is...
It's a boy.
Okay. How did you explain it to your son when he was disappointed three times in one week?
Well, it's been his dream all his life to play for Liverpool Soccer Club. And we, in our house, we are a great champion of people's dreams, no matter how difficult things get. So we supported him in that. Fortunately for him, pre-pandemic, he joined Liverpool Football Club, the supporters club, and he won a competition where he got to meet the Liverpool players and trained on the pitch in Anfield with them. It was an amazing experience for him as a 14-year-old, and I reckon had he not continued on with the soccer, he probably wouldn't have entered the competition or been a member. So really, it's up to the parents to try and get involved. If there is a gap here, it's easy to say the coaches are at fault or the directors are at fault.
Mm.
A cl- club with a positive solution to see if you can start a third team, market that to other kids in the area, and before you know it, you'll be getting a really rewarding experience, not just for you, but for a number of other kids.
Yeah, very good. Very good point. It's about giving, and if you give, you'll get. Liam Conlon, you're a soccer referee. What do you think of this children being excluded on ability?
Well, I think that's totally wrong, Joe, number one. I agree entirely with what Gerard, with that chap, Anthony, there's sentiment about kids playing football, and he's done the right thing in starting a team to so his child could get a game. But I would just like to say, as I asked your researcher there, in relation to the age group that the fourth caller was on, I just got the end of that conversation you had with that, you know, how old that child was. You said he was under 12.
Yeah.
Well, under 12, you see, is totally different a ball game than when you're under 11 and 10 and 9. When you're 11, 10, under 7s, 8s, 9s, 10s, 11s, it's just more or less non-competitive. They wouldn't have any league tables. Every child has to get a game. They're the rules. They must get at least 20 minutes on the park. But when you go under 12s and 13s and 14s, it then becomes 9-a-side for under 12s, 11-a-side for under 13s upwards. But the great thing about that is, as Anthony said, you can have 18 players. You can use the 7s. You can roll them on and off as much as you like. There's no problem there whatsoever. So in that way, you hope that every child will get a game. I think it's very unfair for a young player or a girl under ability just to be let go. Yeah. It's all about a game. It's a game of ball at the end of the day, Joe. But unfortunately, you have glory hunters at schoolboy football as well as everywhere else.
Let me go to Brendan. Brendan O'Reilly, swimming.
Joe, yes.
Yeah, you say there is a children's officer in each club.
I believe there's a children's officer in every club, as in every sports club.
Yeah.
The children's officer is there to represent the child and the needs of the child, and they are more powerful than the coach.
And were you saying Matt should go to the children's?
You go to the children's officer, and if you don't get satisfaction with your children's officer, you go to the national governing body.
Okay.
And it's very simple. You cannot exclude a child. And I thought this was gone the last 20 years when we'd actually cottoned on to the fact that no coach, no matter how good they are, if you took the Irish national coach in, he wouldn't give a pick at under 12s, he couldn't pick a team. There's your full forward, there's your centre field, and that man's 18, that's who he's going to be playing, because he's not developed yet.
That's a very good point, yeah.
Nonsense, you play everybody, and this thing of saying, we're up 4-0 with 20 minutes to go, and we'll keep putting on the subs, give them 3 or 4 minutes, that's just fooling kids, and you don't fool children.
Yeah. Okay.
Give them proper time. Swimming is as competitive as you can get, and it's run in a competitive but a fair atmosphere. I have, in 20 years, seen competitions. I have never heard so much as a geo at a swimming competition, let alone a boo.
Excellent.
Wouldn't be allowed. It wouldn't be tolerated.
Well, the only people we're booing this week, Brendan, are Fianna for excluding our wonderful relay team.
Well, then that's a different thing.
We'd better
leave Swim Ireland to deal with that. And they're well able to deal with it. It's a disgrace, but we are a small country,
we've a good track record in swimming. Stay there, Anne. Yeah. Anne, good afternoon. A teams and B teams and Z teams.
How you doing, Joe?
What happened? Good, yeah.
Well, we actually had moved school, and I was very shocked to learn that there was only actually an A team in the school for every team. For the football, the basketball, camogie, rugby, whatever. And I actually approached the principal. I approached the teachers that were involved coaching and explained, like, the child would like to get involved or whatever. I was willing as a parent to go forward. I had been police vested before with different work that I had done. And I said, like, I'm willing to, you know, help out. And so was many other parents. Sorry, excuse me, I'm going to get stuttery now, Joe.
Yeah, take your time.
But
So the school only have an A team in every code, every sport.
They only have an A team. They only wanted the gold medals. They only wanted the trophies. They did exclude, and the same children were on every team. And I can tell you now that that child has moved on to secondary school. That child has been affected socially by not being able to get involved in teams.
And could you... You could say they wanted to play rugby or play sport. What could they do?
Well, I went to the principal, Joe.
Yeah.
This is no word of a lie.
Okay.
My child actually attends the rheumatologist in Crumlin, where they recommend sport.
Yeah, great.
Play.
Yeah.
The rheumatologist, not the rheumatologist, the principal recommended that my child take up gardening. Now, Joe, I have to say, the poor kids go in that, say, for example, they go in Monday, try out for the team.
Yeah.
You would see the poor little sad faces.
Yeah.
Still going on to this day in that school, coming across a bridge to be meet by mum or dad. Well, how did you get on there? Mm-hmm. And there's only so many times you can tell a child, well, you tried your best.
Yeah.
Don't be worried.
Yeah.
You know,
good point.
But it was the same children. And as I said, it's not just a sport. It's a social aspect.
Yeah.
It's been part of something. It's been involved.
What do you say to your child, Anne, when they're excluded because of so-called ability in one aspect of their lives? What do you say to them?
Well, I did say, well, you tried your best.
Okay.
Now, as I said, she is under the care of the rheumatologist.
Yeah.
And we did involve her in swimming. We brought her private swimming lessons and she'd go swimming herself. And there is competition in swimming with parents screaming and shouting and come on, Billy or Jack or whatever like that. You know, win. We're not like that. We don't want medals. We just want the child to be participating in a sport, part of a team.
Teamwork. Supporting
each
other,
I definitely seen the difference when she entered secondary school. And even now, she's in inter-cert year this year, where she'd be very quiet, you know what I mean?
And come back to the gardening remark.
The gardening, would you? I said,
now, there's nothing
gardening.
Wrong with gardening. Before people, there's nothing wrong with gardening.
Nothing wrong. I love my garden. I love when the child helps me out with the garden or whatever.
But two aspects to the question. One, had your daughter shown an interest in gardening previously? Not at all. She wasn't going in with the Dermot Gavin book under her arm.
We wish.
Okay.
She came from the school that there was 3 and 4 teams, like the A team.
Yeah, of course, great.
There was no difference with the kids because the kids just thought they were out playing basketball or playing football. Nobody knew that there was any, you know, the parents knew that team would win. But the other kids would think that they're just taking part.
Yeah.
But when your man said gardening, I said, are you for real? And I actually passed a comment to our physiotherapist and he said to me, gardening.
By the way, do you think he would have said that if it was a boy?
I don't know. No, I don't think so. I just think that was his aspect, that they just wanted the gold medals and the trophies and that was it. But unfortunately, as I said, it was the same 10 to 15 children would be picked for each team.
Yeah.
Each team. So the kids are isolated, you know what I mean? How can you join in with after-school activities when they're not picked?
It's so sad. I know.
We're not talking about why I want the child to be the best. I just wanted the child to take part in it.
Yeah. And you're talking to someone, Anne, who was brutal at sports.
Yeah.
Oh, it was embarrassing. The Ringo Carroll, our next door dog, used to be picked on the local team before
believe it or not, Joe, she's now in her 30s. She was actually one of the first girl footballers. Now, from a team in Dublin, couldn't play football to beat the band.
Yeah,
got out on the green the first day with her manager, and I'm sure if her manager's listening, he'll know who she is. And was admiring her socks, admiring her new, you know, her football boots. But he made sure that she got a few minutes each time. And I do disagree with the man saying, like, 3 or 4 minutes is no good to a child. 3 or 4 minutes is brilliant.
Okay.
If they can get out and run up and down and think they're part of a team, that's brilliant.
Okay. Let me, Noel Cunningham, you come in praise of Liam Conlon, who was on earlier, the referee, the legendary referee from Kilmore in North Dublin. Go ahead, Noel.
That's right, Joe. Yeah, thanks very much for having me on. Just to say, Liam was one of our managers in Kilmore Boys in the late 70s, the early 80s, and just a brilliant man and had a very strong influence on a lot of people and children in the area.
Yeah.
himself, a man called Bobby Crawford, Sean Flannery, Christy Beasley. I know Liam got to be a referee, but had a really strong influence on a lot of children who needed that at the time. And it was all around participation. We certainly won a lot of trophies, but it was, nobody was left out. So I just would like to acknowledge Liam's influence on all the children of the area. And that was the thing.
Okay, well said.
They've morphed into Kilmore Celtic now, and there's a chap called Gary Henry doing a lot of good work there at the moment. So it's not a hard thing, not an easy thing to do as a manager of a children of children in what are disadvantaged areas. But what they're doing is just superb work. So I'd just like to acknowledge that.
Okay, well said. Eugene Richardson before the break. Thanks, Noel. Eugene, Sheriff, U Club in North Wall, legendary club as well.
There you go, Joe. Just a little call. We started the workshop a couple of weeks ago because we had some sort of a similar problem, Joe, where the 11, 12, 14, we were only getting 6 or 7 out of each squad and we couldn't field the team. So what we done, we started the workshop. The workshop went from 6 players to 24 players in the space of 2 weeks. And that's the age groups from 11s up to 14s. You know, and right, fantastic. Okay. And like, but that's the only way you got to keep the kids.
Well, what about how do you deal with exclusion?
There's no exclusion, Joe. Keep them all in one. Keep them all happy. Keep a workshop going. Build up something for them around that age group. You know what I mean? There's no exclusion. Like, I mean, years ago with exclusion, I had a Saturday team, and the lads didn't get a game on Saturday. We put them in the North League on a Sunday, so the All Star game. You know the way. There should be no exclusion. You know the way. And once the volunteers are there, you can do it. I ran 3 teams 1 year in the senior Saturday, Saturday, 12A Saturday, and the 12A Sunday. You know, and that's if you have the war, if it's in you, it's in you. You know what I mean? And there's no exclusion. There should be no exclusion at all. Keep them going. Keep them on the park. Keep them happy. Send them out with a smile. They come back with a smile. If they win or lose. You know, that's the whole idea.
Well said. You know? Eugene Richland, thanks indeed. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
2 short things. 1, to all the people from Donegal, in fairness, who've been contacting us and indeed beyond about the Mica protest and the horrific story in Donegal of the crumbling houses due to substandard building products. Barry, our own Barry Lennon, is doing some fantastic reports this week, and that's why we haven't been doing it. Barry is, they put an awful lot of resources on the Claire Bourne Show into Barry's reports from Donegal, and they've been absolutely excellent, and he's speaking to everyone involved. And I know there's a big demonstration planned next Tuesday at 1:30 from the convention centre. I think they're marching from the new Dáil, which is the convention centre, to the old Dáil. But it sounds like anything we've heard about, it's an awful situation for householders to be in. And on a more brighter note of summer exhibitions, there's an exhibition currently on. It's on in Castlebar at the Castlebar. It's the location is the Castlebar car park, it's called. It's an exhibition by, they say, Ireland's leading artists. And they're right, because one of them is Brian McCarthy from Dublin. And that exhibition goes on for a number of weeks. And it's been officially opened tomorrow week by former Taoiseach and TV personality and cyclist and Ian Road and the star former Taoiseach and the Kenny. And that's in the Mayo Antiques and Fine Art. It's at the Castle Street Car Park in Castlebar. It's well worth a look, and Brian has won many awards. He's a fantastic artist. His work has been hung in the National Gallery, in the Crawford Gallery, and I'm told it's a beautiful building, by the way, this if you're in Castlebar. And there's a portrait of me that Brian did, and he was shortlisted for Portrait of the Year for it, not for me, but for his skill. And I think they're hanging that over the fireplace in Castlebar next week to keep the children away from the fire. Okay, so well worth, and it's free, by the way. Tom Carey and then Stephen. Tom, good afternoon. Toll roads, what happened?
Hi, Joe. Tom here, yeah. A couple of years ago when I had a toll tag with eToll, one of those companies, it was in the early days now, I got a letter in the post for a missed toll, and they were charged and looking for €490 or a court date. And so what I did is I rang them and I got through to this guy in the credit control, and I said, listen, I'm going to make you a reasonable offer of settlement. And he started laughing at me. He said, this is new. He said, I haven't heard of this. And I said, well, this is a legal term. I said, it's a reasonable offer of settlement. I'm going to offer you the toll fee, which is 790. I'm going to offer you the late fee as well, one late fee. I think it was 21 or 25 euros at the time. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'm making a reasonable offer of settlement of 32 euros. And he says, I'm not taking it. He says, I'm not listening to that. He says, you've got 490 is what you owe. I said, that's fine. I said, write out to me and just tell me why you refuse a reasonable offer of settlement. Yeah. And when we go to the judge, the judge can decide then whether that was a reasonable offer by me. And straight away, he says, he put me on hold and he came back to me and said, have you got your debit card ready? 32 euros. And that was the end of that. Like, I listened to this lady today and I'm saying, like, 8,000 euros. If she just paid the tolls plus a late fee and maybe the price of lifting the car,
it's too late. It's gone. The car is gone.
But surely the...
Unless you can pony up 5,000, which she hasn't got, the car is going to be sold.
But she can... counter-offer a reasonable offer of settlements. Just say, look, I'll give you 1,000 euros.
Hmm.
And then, if you know, it's still... Like, she still has title for the car, right? She didn't give over her title. She just got the car lifted, right? So they gave her the keys. She didn't give over the title. So they can't sell a car they don't own. So the judge then can decide the mitigating circumstances between... of a civil suit to say, look, you lifted my car illegally because I didn't do this, and there's my reasonable offer of settlement. And the judge will say, well, mitigating circumstances, is it a decent offer, 1,000 euros, the price of lifting the car and the fees? The penalty is if they don't accept the reasonable offer and the judge rules against them, they get nothing, which is why they tend to settle.
Well, it looks from what Emma thinks that there may have been a court case which she was unaware of because of a confusion over a dress. But the car is gone. Now, we put a series of questions to the sheriff's office and we said, we asked them why were six men needed to take a car away at 6:45 a.m. this morning. Did the men from the sheriff's office wear ID and are they obliged to show ID? In other words, to present ID. Can the sheriff's office explain the release fee for the car? Unpaid tolls of approximately 100 euro leading to a 8,000 euro release fee. How are deals for release fees come to? Can the office show discretion? The person we're talking about has since been told she can pay 5,000 euro to have her car back. And basically the sheriff's office says we don't talk about individual cases. We only execute court orders and we get a company to execute those orders. And that's all basically. Thanks indeed, Tom Carey. Stephen, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Back to Trinity. Go ahead, Stephen.
Yeah, I believe your caller on before was Emmanuel. Was that his name?
That was his name, yeah.
I think it was incredibly short-sighted of Emmanuel to make the comments that were made on the show. I think as somebody who went through the Trinity College education system, and I have many friends who are both involved in and had progressed through TAP, I think it's just so disconnected from how the college actually works. Was Emmanuel actually aware that it costs the same amount for somebody who goes through the traditional access to Trinity as it does to go to Maynooth or Galway or anywhere else? He was aware of that.
The same fees. Well, he's gone now, but the same...
Well, if that is the case, well, then it just seems completely archaic of an idea to turn around and think that Trinity has some sort of elitist ideology behind it in comparison to the fact that other colleges have equally high or low access points to different courses depending on spatial dimensions, depending on everything that might go into the kind of things that departments need to take into account when it comes to allocating spaces to incoming first years. And also, in many cases, my course included, points were higher in other colleges. So really and truly, all that came across to me was somebody who had some sort of a lack of understanding about how Trinity works, but also a lack of understanding of where Trinity actually sits within the broader national framework of other courses throughout the country, where in fact it can be lower points, it could be higher points, it could be
now,
whatever.
Are people harking back? Do you remember Catholics were told, wealthy Catholics, because you had to have money to go to Trinity, wealthy Catholics were told that they couldn't go by Archbishop John Charles McQuaid, and that the ban on Catholics going to Trinity lasted until 1970, which is relatively recently.
Absolutely. I think to turn around and say, and I do hear you, absolutely, there's definitely not enough of Trinity.
You can argue it's half a century ago.
It is, and I mean, a lot has happened in 50 years, yeah. but even apart from that, to then bring the conversation to Trinity spending money on accommodation across the inner city, which we all know has had a housing crisis for the last umpteen years, yeah. and students pay an extortionate amount as it is anyway and have to work multiple jobs, I think Trinity shouldn't be turned around and berated for trying to buy up halls or whatever. It doesn't really fit.
Okay, good points. They're a vibrant part of the city, really are. Really, it's an incredible city that has a university right at the centre of it. It's brilliant, I think, anyway. Okay, Stephen, go to me. I think loads more people should be going to third level. Go to Míle Maith agat, Stephen. Today's producer is Fergus Sweeney, research, Richard Byrne. Sound is Ciarán Dunne. 515151, my channel. Ray Darcy.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. For more on our 212 offers, visit your local Kia dealer or log on to kia.com.
1850 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.